from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the forecast for Togiak herring has been released. We get a wrap-up of the Red King crab season, and we hear about efforts to perfect hatchery rearing of king crab. All that, and Mark Begich plans to meet with representatives of Aqua Bounty, who he has railed against over genetically engineered salmon. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at www.nsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Senator Mark Begich says representatives from Massachusetts-based Aqua Bounty will be visiting his office next week. He says the company, which is currently applying for approval from the Food and Drug Administration to sell genetically engineered fish in the U.S., wasn't impressed with his recent Halloween campaign preaching the anti-Frankenfish gospel. While denouncing genetically engineered fish to his Capitol Hill colleagues, Begich handed out buttons emblazoned with a finned skeleton resembling something uglier than a wolf eel or Irish lord. Begich says there are other avenues Aqua Bounty can take that exclude the engineering of salmon, though he's not sure what they are.
Yeah, that's something else I'll let them figure out, but it won't be salmon. So that's kind of my, I think there's, you know, what I intend to meet with them about is to really explain why we are so opposed to what they're doing. And, you know, if they want to do research and other things in other areas, you know, I'd be open to hear what they have to say. But in this situation, they're taking a product that we know in Alaska, we have built into an incredibly sustainable fisheries. Now, you know, Aqua Bounty is an East Coast operator, and here's what they see. They look out their window, give or take, probably, and they see no fish. It's because, you know, they did poor management, and this is their answer. And I'm going to argue back to them that there is a better way to go after improving the stocks of fisheries, and that's where they should spend their time, not just creating a fake fish, a frankenfish, to substitute what they depleted because they poorly managed it.
Begich has introduced the Pegasus Act, which essentially makes it illegal to transport genetically engineered fish across state lines or sell it to foreign markets. Begich also talked this week about a $3.8 million appropriation that would drive an overhaul of the North Pacific Groundfish Observer Program. The program trains and dispatches observers to sail on fishing boats to gather samples and collect data on what the crew is catching.
We get criticism off and on that Alaska gets all these special things. But here's one where, for example, we've been paying for it. And everywhere else has been getting the free ride from the federal government. Now we're asking for our fair share and our participation. Alaska has done its job. And that's why we have the most sustainable fisheries in the country, because we understand the value of this. We understand the value of ensuring that we have the right kind of investments. And the federal government, as they have been participating with every other state, needs to now participate with us. And we think there's an opportunity here. But we got to put our arms around that money. And the fact is, as you know, the fiscal condition of this country is not the greatest. And we have to just guard it carefully. But the good news is it's made it through the process to date, which is very positive because they're working under the financial limitations and caps of the budget, so that's good.
Alaska waters are the only participating area that doesn't receive federal money to pay for the program. The Bristol Bay Red King crab season is pretty much over, and fishermen are saying it beat their expectations. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce has more.
10 years ago, a Bristol Bay Red King crab fisherman could head out for 3 or 4 days and come home with a year's salary in his pocket. After the fishery was rationalized, it seemed unlikely that was ever going to happen again. Until this year. When the season started, things weren't looking good for Bristol Bay. The quota was cut by 47% this year, and the preseason abundance survey showed a continued decline in crab stocks. Some crabbers were predicting this would be the last opener for at least a few years. But as the season progressed, things started looking better. To start with, fishermen pulled up a lot more Red King in each pot this year than in recent seasons. The 3-year average is 20 legal crabs per pot. This year's preliminary number is 32, or almost 40% more. Fish and Game Area Management biologist Heather Fitch says it's hard to say why the catch rate was so much higher.
You know, I wouldn't really want to speculate on that. Could be that crab were just in areas where they weren't in previous years. I heard that from a few members of the fleet, which could have to do with the temperature over the summer. You know, it could have to do with maybe the population's doing better than we thought. You know, there's a lot of things that play into it that I couldn't really speculate as to exactly why we're getting such high catch rates this year.
Captain John Hansen says he did notice boats were finding crab in places they hadn't before, but cautioned that the reduced quota is probably padding the numbers.
You know, if everybody else was catching twice as much, I'm sure by the end of that, it would look pretty skinny.
Bill Prout is skipper of the Silver Spray. He says the area he fished seemed to have an abundance of crab, even with multiple vessels picking it over.
We set pots back four times and still had good catch rate in them. And some other boats fished in that area, left, and new ones came in and still had good fishing. So it just looked like there was a good abundance of crab.
It might be hard to say how much influence the reduced quota had on the catch rate, but it had a pretty straightforward impact on the price. Crab broker Rob George says the final dock price is going to be around $10.50 per pound. That's almost $3 more than last year and a new record for the fishery. That would seem like a good thing, but skipper Bill Prout says the higher prices make him nervous.
You know, it's nice to see a high price, but there's always some repercussions. It's things too out of line, and it just kind of throws the balance of things off, I believe.
Balance is something crabbers talk a lot about these days, both in terms of money and fish. Here's Captain John Hansen again.
Ultimately, the bottom line is that the way this fishery is run now, that everybody is vested in this industry and they want to look after it to where we can fish every year and not go to this boom and bust cycle like it used to be years ago.
That balance can be a hard thing to achieve with a dynamic resource. It's still up in the air whether the fishery will be closed next season. Area management biologist Heather Fitch says it really depends on the results of the federal trawl survey that happens each summer.
The survey data gets plugged into a model, and that's what we use to determine the total allowable catch each year, and that's where we get the relative abundance indexes for the fishery.
And sometimes that survey is at odds with what fishermen see out on the grounds, as was the case this year. So really, it's hard to say what the future holds for Bristol Bay. While the Red King season might have been unusually short, fishermen will probably face the reverse situation when they go after snow crab in January. The quota for that fishery nearly doubled this year to almost 90 million pounds, which means it's unlikely any boats are going to have a one-trip season for snow crab. In Unalaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960. Or online at alaskaboat.com. And by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
In the latest update from the king crab rearing program at the Aleutic Pride Hatchery in Seward, researchers have been gauging survival rates based on population density. Ben Daly is an Alaska Sea Grant Program research biologist with the University of Alaska Fairbanks based in Seward. He said that generally, the lower the density, the higher the survival rate.
But that doesn't always mean the most amount of crabs in the end. So there's kind of this trade-off that we're always trying to achieve where we can kind of maximize the survival, but also have a reasonably high density so that we can get, you know, a reasonable number of animals at the end of it all. We could, you know, put one crab per tank if we, you know, wanted to get 100% survival, but, you know, of course that's not feasible logistically and cost-wise to do that in a hatchery. So we're trying to strike this balance between stocking density and survival and, you know, what's kind of the magic combination of those things.
The latest study showed Pribilof blue king crab had a survival rate of 85% when reared at a density of 200 crab per square meter. Tests of survival at different densities have seen as many as 6,000 crab per square meter and survival rates around 20%. One factor affecting survival rates is the high level of cannibalism among the crab, especially at the higher densities.
The juveniles are extremely cannibalistic, so, you know, at these super high densities, a lot of times, well, all the time, really, when they molt, they quickly get consumed by each other. So that's kind of the biggest challenge we face rearing the juveniles is this high cannibalistic mortality that goes on. I suspect there's some cannibalism going on in nature, but certainly not the degree that we see in the hatchery because, you know, in nature, of course, they're able to spread out much more and there's, you know, natural substrates that they can hide in from each other. And so they they probably don't experience the same degree of cannibalism in the wild, I would suspect.
The ACCRAB program is a joint venture by the Alaska Sea Grant College Program, UAF School of Fisheries, NOAA Fisheries, and the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery, as well as community and industry groups. The ultimate goal is to someday restock depleted Kodiak red king crab and Pribilof blue king crab with hatchery-reared crab. Daly says the technology and technique is probably ready.
I would say the hatchery science is sort of ahead of the politics at this point. I mean, we feel confident that we can rear these animals, you know, fairly consistently in the hatchery. So it's kind of a question more from a management perspective, in my opinion, as far as when that could happen. Of course, everything takes money, so, you know, to achieve numbers that, you know, we think might make a dent in the wild population, we'd need, you know, huge numbers, so that, of course, would cost more money. And so we're, you know, constantly trying to improve the technology, but I think the basic methods for culturing the king crab in the hatchery are there currently.
Updates earlier this year have measured how seafloor terrain complexity affects predation on young crab by older ones and how growth rates are affected by differing water temperatures. They found the more complex seafloor environment reduced predation and that young crab grew faster in warmer water. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game released the 2012 Togiak and Dutch Harbor herring forecast last week. The herring biomass in Togiak is expected to be over 123,000 tons, with the allowable harvest for the fishery set at 21,600 tons. That's split 70-30 between the purse seine fleet and the gillnetters. Area management biologist Tim Sands says the management strategy for the annual fishery will likely stay the same as the past few years, despite the fact that the projected run biomass would be 16% less than the recent 10-year average. He says the lower-than-average forecasted biomass is partially due to the fact that it was difficult to observe the overall herring biomass this year.
You know, we had really poor weather conditions in 2011, so we didn't have really good observations. And so that's kind of why the forecast went down, because we didn't have a good observations. And that's factored into the forecast.
Despite the fact that the expected biomass for next year is forecast to be below the recent 10-year average, the projected harvest would be 20% more. Sands says the forecast for the fishery will not necessarily be the driving force behind the decisions made by fishermen and processors.
What the markets do and how much market participation there is, that's ultimately going to decide who participates and at what level, I guess.
Fish and Game is predicting that age 7 and 8 fish will comprise about 52% of the overall biomass. The age 9 to 11 fish are expected to make up just over 23%, with age 4 to 6 herring making up 19%. Fish and Game is predicting that the average weight of herring harvested will be about 11 ounces. The 2012 forecast sets the Dutch Harbor food and bait allocation at over 1,600 tons. That fishery targets the same biomass of herring that spawn in the Togiak area. The Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle is going on as we speak. There are hundreds of exhibitors and 18 seminars for fishermen to enjoy. An update from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute is on the schedule, as are discussions about e-landings for salmon and using incentives and technology to avoid bycatch in rationalized fisheries. There will also be an interesting lecture on comparing survival myths with survival facts presented by NIOSH and MC.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KMXT's Jennifer Canfield in Kodiak, KUCB's Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, and KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.